So, welcome to Theatre Voice, Hardeep Singh Kohli.
Hello.
I first saw The Miser in October when it was on at the Tara Arts Centre. Yeah,
seems like a long time ago.
Yes, and it's now going on tour starting the 18th of February.
Yes.
So, Theatre Voice is very glad to have the opportunity to catch up with you at last and talk to us a little bit about it. I know we're in a noisy space, but hopefully
it's bustling East London, the heart of the creative capital of the world, so
great.
We should accept the background noise.
Fabulous, we are. The story of The Miser is very close to the original plot by Molière. Can you just talk us through the specific ways you adapted it to the kind of Asian context?
I mean, for a start, I think I'm very against the use of the word Asian, because for me it's sort of meaningless. It's too broad a term to apply, because technically Asian means Bengali as well as Madrasi as well as Punjabi as well as Pakistani, and I can't think of a way where there is commonality between those four, just those four examples of Asianness, as we call it. We've specifically made it a Punjabi production because I think the morality, the mores of kind of the Punjab of my parents' life is very apt for Molière's Paris, as you saw it, which perhaps says a little about the innocence with which Punjabi life existed 50, 60 years ago. I think what's changed in the West quite a lot, certainly over the course of my lifetime, is the role of the family and the power of certainly the patriarch in families. Now, obviously, quite a lot of that is for the better, and quite a lot of that has led to the emancipation of women and all, you know, things that we should all be celebrating, in the rise of feminism. But in terms of a piece of work which is predicated upon power being in the hands of men, it was very interesting to adapt the Miser to Punjabi society, because in 2013, as we can see from contemporary India, for worse and for better, power still very much resides in the hands of men. So for me, it was very specifically, I'm working with Jitendra as well, who's very aware of his Punjabi ancestry, as I am of my own. This is very much a Punjabi production, and I think that's what's so exciting about working in the brown arts just now, is we're starting to break down these brushstroke terms like Asian and actually making them, you know, I don't go out for an Asian meal. I go out for a Punjabi meal or a Keralan meal or a Gujarati meal.
But it still reflects a kind of a pan-Indian India, even though the family may be very specifically Punjabi, because their references are drawn from Hindi movies, you know, from the 50s to the current day. Some of the little aphorisms that you've got in there come from different bits, you know, so
yeah, but it's interesting that nobody says, you know, nobody describes Pinter as a European writer, you know. And so this is, I think, you know, I struggle to write for Punjabis. I struggle to write for myself and represent myself, let alone represent anyone else. So I think there is a common experience of people across the Asian subcontinent, be it cinema, as you mentioned, and certain cultural values. But also there are things very specifically Punjabi about my take on the world. And hopefully some of that specificity has made its way into the adaptation.
But when you were adapting it, I'm assuming you had a translation of the original story. I mean, how did you work? It's very true to the original in terms of the broad brushstroke of the story itself, but how did you work through the nuances of the characters? You know, when, for example, when you're changing, you change the character of the miser for a start. What was the process?
Interesting. This is a project that Jitendra's wanted to do for decades, and it's a play, funnily enough, I studied at university, because Liz Lockhead, the Macker, the Scottish poet laureate, had done an amazing version of this play in Scots. So for me, the first time I had watched a production of this had been in Scots, so adaptation was part of my initial experience. So for me, in a sense, adapting it wasn't difficult. And I think good stories adapt. There's a universality to good stories, which is why I challenge anyone, you know, to watch great Hindi cinema. It doesn't matter where you are in the world, great story is great story. So in terms of actually practically working on the adaptation, Jitendra had some very strong images in his head, which were very helpful for me to take those images on. But also, the reason I think that the Miser works in the original French is because they're archetypes. You know, Harpagon is an archetype. And so it's easy, in a sense, to, if you have some clarity about kind of cultural matters, it's easy to reimagine that archetype into kind of modern Indian setting. Plus, I think there is a more interesting curve being resolved, I think, in my work and perhaps in Tara's work more generally. I mean, I don't know what you think about this. Is, you know, I know you're someone that's been across the Asian arts for, you know, a good wee while, but I think contemporary Indian culture seems to resonate much more with the classics than the culture the classics were written for, if you know what I mean. For example, House of Bernard Alba immediately can be adapted to modern rural India. It works. You know, Romeo and Juliet, that notion of feuding families means more. You know, if you imagine a Muslim and a Sikh family instead of the Capulets and the Montagues, you've got the Shahs and the Sainis. We understand that. You know, there is something that Indian culture is still held on to that allows these notions of the classics to have more leverage and more resonance. You know, it's very difficult, and again, one walks carefully through this. It's very difficult to do, you know, in, you know, the feminist West, to do a version of you know, Bernarda Alba, because, you know, women really ought not to be treated that way. The reality is they still are in certain parts of India, and by extension in certain parts of Indian immigrant families in the West. So yeah,
so from that point of view, the play fits. I mean, it's a kind of a satirical comedy.
Yeah, but also I think really interestingly for the immigrant class, money means something else. The notion of money was so much more central to my parents' life and then to mine, you know, because they came here working two or three jobs, you know, because of the inherent racism of the time that continues today. You know, my dad had a degree in economics and a degree in law, but was working in Ford spare parts, you know, selling carburetors over the counter. You know, he watched people promoted over his head when he became a teacher. So money and the garnering of money, the keeping of money, has always been central to the immigrant experience. That's why you come to have a better life. To have a better life means to make money. So that's very interesting for a man who's made money his life. I think what's very interesting is the dichotomy that has been created between my parents' generation and mine. My parents wanted the best for their children, so, you know, educated them, gave them middle-class upbringings and a middle-class sensibility. And then one day woke up to find out that their children were strangers to them, that, you know, their children didn't have very much in common with them. And I think that's what's really interesting in this adaptation of The Miser as well, is that disconnect between Harpagon, Harjinder, and his children. He has created different children. I think his was less intentional than my parents' generation, but nonetheless, it kind of speaks on a number of different levels, I hope.
I remember, I saw the show, as I said, a little while ago, and I just remember it being very funny. It was, you know, sure, there's an underlying seriousness to it, in a sense, but it's on the level of comedy, and it's you know, very enjoyable on that level. Yes, I can see the idea of the migrant children doing better than their father, but at the same time, the father is sort of not a likable character in that sense, because he is completely you know, unable to see any other point of view except this particular point of view. He's an archetype in your story, but still.
But really interestingly, and this is something Jitendra and I were very conscious of all the way through, is that actually the father is the least duplicitous of all the characters. Because one may completely disagree with his line, one might completely abhor his behaviour, but it's consistent all the way through, actually, you know? He is the least duplicitous, and I think that's really interesting, and I think, in a way, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I've just fallen in love with my character.
Yeah, maybe, but,
you know,
but it was enjoyable. But can I just ask you another question related to that? In terms of the songs, did you write them as well? The kind of
I wrote based on the Hindi film. Yeah,
I mean, what was that process like for you as a writer?
Well, I mean, I'd worked with Tara on the Panto the year before, Bollywood Cinderella, and so this was a natural extension of that feeling. And you know, we've kind of grown up watching Hindi cinema, and I think again, the songs, the idea of the songs are very much Jitendra's idea. That's very much Tara's USP, is the Indianification, if you like, of texts. So I was very much sort of, you know, a writer for hire in that context. But you can't help but have a love for music. And I've always wanted to write lyrics. It's always been a kind of an ambition of mine. So and working with such brilliant musicians, I mean, Daniel Donde and the team are fantastic.
Sweeney.
I mean, you know, Sweeney's got one of the most amazing voices I've heard, and you know, as a kind of creative unit, they're superb. But Daniel as MD is very light on his feet, so it makes it easy for me. If I was working with a less accommodating MD, I think the songs wouldn't have been so good, because there was space for me to meld and change and tweak and turn the lyrics, because it's not something I've naturally done before. Writing I've done for years, of course, but writing song lyrics is another thing altogether. But I really, really enjoyed doing it because I love music. And I think, again, that's what, you know, what makes it Indian is that the complete theatre of it. I think particularly what's nice about this for me, I'm so heartened that you remember laughter. You know, there is always the joker in Hindi cinema. There's always the tragedy. And there are always songs, and there was that sense of melodrama. And I think Jitendra, as a particularly good physical director of action, has made those components, which on the face of it are cinema, but he's made it theatre by the way he directs and sets and blocks. So from that point of view, it was really interesting. But you know, I loved writing the songs. I'd love to have spent more time with the MD working on the music, because, you know, but you know, time is limited. But no, I enjoyed it. I think the songs work. I hope they work.
Yeah, very clever, you know, and the woman who plays
Frosine.
Yes, describing the chakras and karma. You know, it's quite funny. You've taken the wind out of my sails. Or your work is done. Don't remember.
Well, that's based on Tera Bera Gark, actually, which is...
It's based on a Hindi movie song.
Well, yeah, but also the phrase itself, there's a... One of the worst things you can say to someone in Punjabi is Tera Bera Gark, which is may your ship sink.
Ah, I see, okay. You know, so you were literally...
So I was actually, taking like that, you know, and taking it on. But also, when you write words for music, you... because, I mean, you don't know this, and there's no reason why you should, but the original first draft was completely in verse.
Oh, I see,
okay. So I wrote the whole thing in verse, just as much as an academic test for myself, you know, because I think there's something... and it was too much, it was too heavy and ponderous. And then what we did was we selected bits that didn't work and wrote them back into prose, but the ideas were already there in the verse. And some of the verse has been kept. There are particularly poignant bits, particularly between the son and Mariam. Kishore and Mariam, who are the lovers, there's an exchange between them that's in verse. That again, it heightens it. You know, the way, you know, verse does. You're kind of there's a rhythm, and the meter plays sort of tricks with your ear, and just sharpens everything up. It's an alchemy of sorts, I suppose, but very enjoyable to hear, especially when the words don't sound like the ones you wrote, which is always a great victory.
But how did you keep mentioning Jitendra Verma, artistic director of Tara, who directed the show.
Yeah.
But how did your collaboration work on this particular project?
Well, I mean, we've always collaborated. I mean, you know, as I say, it was originally, you know, he had very strong input into the script.
I mean, the play is very much the kind of work, Tara's intercultural work in that sense. You know, it's a sort of Indian, Punjabi, yeah. English, I think music, the, yeah. live music. He loves to use live musicians as opposed to signature music.
I think the difference is I'm a comedy writer. I write comedy, and I'm a political animal, so there are a lot of political references. I suppose, in a sense, Tara could have done this without me, but it wouldn't have been a comedy, I don't think, because, you know, Jitendra will be the first to admit he is not a comedian. You know, he's a brilliant artistic director, but not a comedian. And what I have is perhaps the ability to see the world through kind of funny eyes, and yet have an underlying seriousness to all, hopefully. So in that way, it worked quite well, because neither Jitendra and I were doing the same things. We were both doing different things that were crucial to the process. And also, you know, let's not forget, you know, much as this is going on tour, this is independent theatre. There isn't a lot of money around. And, you know, there isn't a lot of money to pay writers. There isn't a lot of money to spend. You know, I can't take a month and think about it. You know, I have to write it, deliver it. Drafts come back 3-4 days later. So there isn't time to reflect. So in that point of view, there is a time for indulgence, and hopefully there is no indulgence in the script because we didn't have time for it. Equally, there isn't time to necessarily finesse things as much as we would have liked to. Luckily with this, I've had a chance between the first run and this just to go in and tweak and tidy. But again, ask any writer if they're ever finished with a script. We're never finished with scripts.
So talking about the politics, I mean, I think what's interesting is the references to austerity or doing things on a budget, which is very much chimes with what goes around in Britain today. I was just wondering if that kind of exploration of austerity was in the back of your mind.
Well, I mean, it never... it never felt... There couldn't have been a better time to do The Miser in British India. In that British Indian concept.
It's a contemporary story. It's in contemporary times.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, for The Miser ought to... I think this is what really works for me. We had a big mixed audience, and it wasn't just a brown audience at Tara. It never is. But I think a lot of the white British audience, even though perhaps a handful of the specific references were lost on them, could really engage with the notions of austerity and the notions of how one manages money and the global credit crisis. Because within that context, a man that holds on to all his money is an even more fascinating character, because his stock, quite literally, has never been higher because the rest of the world is suffering. So, again, Bollywood Cinderella was very political in that. You know, I think theatre... You know, I grew up... You know, I'm from Glasgow. I grew up watching incredibly political theatre with a capital P. You know, 784, 7% of the world owns 84% of the wealth. That's who I used to go and see. I worked at the Citizens Theatre, which was, you know, the most socialist theatre in Scotland, if not Britain. So I think I'm a little alarmed. I'm very alarmed at how little political theatre there is in London these days. I understand everyone's trying to run a business, so they'll put musicals on, great. But actually, rooms above pubs, if we're not reading the Communist Manifesto now, if we're not understanding Keynesian economics, if we're not reading up about Adam Smith, when are we going to do it? You know, and if our writers and our dramaturgs haven't got their hands on that material and are inputting it into the live experience of theatre, then we truly are lost. We truly are lost. If we're not doing it now, we'll never do it. So yeah, of course it's going to be political. A writer ought really to reflect the times they live in, shouldn't they?
Yes. Even if you're doing an adaptation of the 17th century work, then you have got to put it in a manner that, as you say, resonates.
Well, hopefully, you know. Yeah. But I think, again, I keep coming back to the same notion that, you know, were it not for, you know, if you look at the story Where the Wild Things Are, that beautiful kids story that I've told my kids, that my parents' generation told their kids, that my kids will probably tell, you know, great stories will last. And Molière was a brilliant observer of stories. This story is a great story. It will continue to run and run. It just needs to be tweaked. every now and again, and all I've done is tweak it, I hope.
What about more collaboration with Tara Arts? Was another Panto or another classic reinterpreted?
Yeah, you know, I think Tara's going through a very exciting time just now with the redevelopment of the building. Jitendra was a bit of a hero of mine growing up. You know, for any of us who worked in the creative arts, you know, there were a handful of people out there that were beacons on the horizon that made us think the impossible was possible. So it's been an honour to work with him. But, you know, I'm a writer with a big appetite and great ambition, so, you know, quite like to work with Indu at the Tricycle. I'd quite like to work with Vicky at the Royal Court. You know, I'd love to write for the National. You know, who wouldn't, you know? And also, I think... you know, I'm not a tricky writer. Do you know what I mean? I don't write tricky, troublesome work that leaves you in two minds about what it was. You know what my shit's about. You know, if you laugh, if you're entertained, great. With some politics, with some social commentary, great. You know, I remember at the end of Bollywood Cinderella, one of my favourite lines is where Cinderella stands up at the end and says, you know, I'm a feminist, you know. So, you know, we'll get married, but we'll be equal partners. I won't be, you know, I won't honour and obey you. I will just honour you. So to be able to put things like that in, that get a laugh, and you see little girls in the audience, and you hope that one day they might remember that little bit they saw at the end of this silly Indian panto in Ellesfield. So, you know, so long as I'm allowed to do that, I'm really happy. And I love writing for the theatre. I'm never going to get rich doing it, but then I've not been interested in being rich for quite some time. I'm not a miser anyway. As long as I'm not a miser, I'm you know. But yeah, listen, I'd love to work with Tara again. You know, Tara, it's a special place. But it's going to be interesting to see. And I think, you know, Jitendra, part of the problem with Tara is it's been like a boutique theatre. And all the responsibility sits in the hands of a very few people. And that's great when you're starting out. But as they expand and get bigger, they need to change the structure. And it's going to be interesting to see how through that structural change... You know, they may choose... Well, they, you know, right now, yeah, but they may choose to work with other writers. You know, there are far better writers out there than me, you know. So they may choose to work with them or whatever. But I'd love to keep talking to Tara.
So just to ask you a final question. You mentioned very casually earlier on that it was a very exciting time for Brown Arts. And I just wondered if you could slightly expand on what you mean by that.
I think if you look at television, for example, Brown Britain has gone backwards on television in the last 10 years. It's almost like brown people are invisible on TV. We don't really exist there anymore. We used to have, goodness gracious me, there were used to be the odd play here, the odd play there. Basically, Mirasal and Steve Basker were, you know, single-handedly keeping our presence high on the agenda on television. We've gone through a really conservative time in the last 4 or 5 years, and that conservatism, with a small C as well as a big political C, has meant that people, and this is a natural response, people turn to those they know. And unfortunately, most of the people with their hands on the levers of power in television, no white people. You know, it's a tiny coterie of individuals that run the television business and the film business in this country. So it's become very white and somehow less interesting for me. Radio has suffered to some extent in the same way, but where radio did much better was it had the Asian network, which blooded people like Anita Rani, you know, people like Adil Ray, Nikki Bedi, a whole generation of brilliant broadcasters who got their hours under their belt in this quiet network and then were moved to the mainstream. But I think what's interesting about the most interesting thing about Brown British culture for me is we're beginning to break it down. We're hopefully stopping using the term Asian, and where as individuals, you know, Punjabis are engaging with their Punjabi heritage, the Gujaratis are engaging with their Gujarati heritage and finding Gujarati stories to tell, the Bengalis, the Bangladeshis are doing the same, and we're understanding that we're not all the same. We may have been treated as the same, but we're not the same. We have commonality, but commonality is not the same as being the same, if you see what I mean. So I think that's what's interesting. And the food, I keep talking about food, there's a lot of food in the play. But again, I kind of mentioned food earlier on. in Peckham, South London, there's a brilliant South Indian restaurant. I had lunch at a Punjabi restaurant, Lahore Kebab House, today. They are both meals from the Indian subcontinent. I can barely move now for the lunch I had. If I went to Ganapati in Peckham, I would fly out of the restaurant. The food is different, the culture is different, the people are different, the mores are different, and it's time we start telling these different stories. The people are here to do that. Hopefully, people will allow us to tell our stories.
Thank you so much for talking to Theatre Voice.
No, always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.